I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Election Day is right around the corner. Time for a show about voting rights, voter suppression, and redistricting or gerrymandering. Earlier this year, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court struck down the state's congressional district map that had been in place since 2011 and drew a new one that's in effect for the November 6th midterm election. Critics had argued that the previous map gave the Republicans unfair advantage, resulting in 13 out of 18 congressional seats, with voters pretty much evenly split between the two main parties. The current map will be redrawn by the legislature in 2021, after the new census. Joining us is Carol Cunningham, and she's chair of Fair Districts Pennsylvania, also vice president of government and social policy with the League of Women Voters of Pennsylvania, someone we have talked to numerous times when the topic is redistricting. Carol, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, lines always open, 1-888-477-9499, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and we know that voting and gerrymandering is a hot topic among the Radio Times listeners. Let's talk first about this congressional map that was drawn essentially by the state Supreme Court. Does it fit what your organization has been looking for?
Well, we're really interested in process more than product, and we would like a transparent process that involves citizen input. So while we believe that the new map is more competitive and certainly more fair, it's not the solution that we're looking for, and we're looking for a long-term, permanent fix to the process where citizens' voices are heard and where everybody understands why the lines are drawn the way they're drawn. It's been interesting to hear our legislative leaders complain that they don't know why the Supreme Court drew the districts as they did, and we kind of chuckle and say, yeah, and that's, you know, welcome to the party. We've never known why you drew the lines the way you've drawn them, unless we take the data and dig in, and then we can see they're drawn to control the outcome. But we would like it to be a transparent, open process.
And I do want to talk about that, but what do you make of the kind of engagement that we're seeing? It'll be interesting to see how many people vote in the midterms, which is in just a couple of weeks. But we are seeing political engagement. We're seeing more people that ran in the primary in Pennsylvania. Do you think that's some degree related to redistricting?
Well, I would say certainly with our congressional districts, they were not competitive. They were drawn very specifically for incumbents in the past. And why bother if you know the map has been finagled for a particular person and you know the opposition doesn't stand a chance, which is the way those lines were drawn. So we certainly are seeing new candidates, new energy, a lot of excitement. Certainly in the area I'm in, the area that was surrounded by the infamous goofy-kicking Donald District 7, that whole region is very energized and has some wonderful candidates running. And for the first time in a long time, we're going to have women in Congress, because the way those lines were drawn, they were drawn by a bunch of white guys for their white guy friends, to be honest. And now there are women who are saying, we have a chance. And there will be some that will win. So as a woman, I find that really energizing. And I think there are a lot of women who are turning out to work on campaigns because they're tired of it being a white guy club. And we're seeing how that plays out in things in Congress and in Harrisburg, and women are tired of it.
Well, let's talk a bit about Harrisburg and the legislative districts. While the Supreme Court, Pennsylvania Supreme Court, looked at congressional districts, legislative districts, a whole other matter.
Yeah, so the congressional districts get a lot of attention, and part of the issue is it's a little difficult to measure gerrymandering. How do you measure it? But the Princeton Gerrymandering Project has been doing some really excellent work trying to identify gerrymandered legislative districts, and according to them, we are among the worst. If you took the three or four that were the most gerrymandered in any election in recent times, we are among that three or four.
Really?
And when you zoom in on our maps, and we have a website, fairdistrictspa.com, there's a section, the problem district maps. If you zoom in on our House or Senate maps, you can see very strange things going on, and you can see our urban communities are very much cracked out. So if you have a population of a particular kind of population that if you drew a fair district, they would have a representative, you can take that population and divide it out into districts, into surrounding regions, so that district has no voice. So we have Democratic urban, often poor communities in places like Allentown or Reading or Bethlehem, go across the state, and those would have their own representation if districts were drawn properly, but they can be divided into three or four districts into the rural areas around them, and then they have no voice. So, and you go across the state and you look, and again and again and again, you'll see very strange things. Even Phoenixville, which is the town near me,
right.
My house district runs from Phoenixville to Coatesville. Two urban communities, runs through very affluent Chester County, and in effect, Phoenixville and Coatesville are deprived of a voice, and Chester County, the more urban, the more suburban, wealthy part of Chester County becomes the heart of that district instead of those two communities having their own representation.
And I think our listeners, I just want to make sure they understand from your perspective when it comes to redistrict or when it comes to gerrymandering, it ends up being that the elected official picks their voters versus the voter picking their elected representative.
Very much, but it goes beyond that. So our legislative districts are drawn by five people. So the party leaders in each house choose a person who is also a party leader in that house, and the fifth person is chosen by the state Supreme Court. But what that does is allows those party leaders to punish legislators who push for reform or refuse to vote the way they're told, and it allows them to reward and lock in place those who do as they're told. So it's not just legislators choosing their voters. It's leadership locking down the entire process of what happens in Harrisburg. And we've heard from legislators and past legislators that they're very much held hostage. They have no autonomy, they have no voice. So it's depriving voters of a voice. It's also depriving our legislators of voice.
Well, I mentioned the fact that certainly congressional map will be interesting to see what happens in November, but that Republicans by and large represent Pennsylvania in the House in D.C. It's also true in Harrisburg that the legislature is controlled largely by Republicans.
That is the case. And what we're seeing as people become more informed and more engaged, they become more outraged at the way this is playing out. So we've done over 600 public meetings across the state. And we've had people who have come to those meetings who have said, no way, this is wrong. They're furious. What can they do? Some of those have run for office in gerrymandered districts where they're told you don't stand a chance. But then we have people who have said, okay, I'm going to get involved with Fair Districts PA. And now they're saying, well, I'm actually going to help these people's campaign because I'm tired of being told who my legislator will be. So gerrymandering kind of depends on predictable voter data. And if you can get new people to register and get more people to turn out, you can actually flip those gerrymandered districts, or you can shift them and make them competitive. And that's what we're seeing across the state. Last time around, there were half of our districts across the state that had no opposition in the general election.
And we should just underscore that.
Yes, we should underscore that. And so when people say, well, why are people so engaged? Is this because of President Trump? I say absolutely not. I mean, that's a piece of what's going on. But many people in both Republican and Democratic districts in every part of the state are saying, when we go to the polls and there's only one choice, this is not what democracy looks like. We want to have a choice. And we want to be heard and we want to be represented. And so people across the state are working to change this. And one of the ways to do that is to do voter registration and voter turnout.
You've been spending a lot of time in Harrisburg for all the obvious reasons. Tell us what you have witnessed.
Well, we had a bill, Senate Bill 22 and then House Bill 722. We were working hard to get co-sponsors on those and then to get them hearings. The House Bill 722 had 110 co-sponsors. That was the most of any bill in this session, and it did not get a hearing. There's a rule that's called the discharge petition where the original sponsor can get signatures to get that bill moved. The committee chair, Daryl Metcalf, the day it was to be discharged, held a not well-publicized meeting. In fact, he gave less than an hour of notice for the meeting of that committee. They showed up, and he handed out an amendment of his own to that bill, which put power even more securely in the hands of legislative leaders. So instead of five people with the fifth chosen by the state Supreme Court, it was six people, four of them chosen by legislative leaders, and the other two elected by the House and Senate, which means the majority is choosing them. So without any discussion, without any debate, That amendment was passed, which basically killed that bill. But then they didn't pass it out of committee, which would have allowed it to be reverted back to the original bill on the House floor. So he killed the bill through legislative maneuvers and was not called to task for that by the Speaker Terza. He was allowed to get away with that. And people watching said, this is not the way democracy should work.
Well, it's hard to argue with that. But nonetheless, this is what you and others are up against when it comes to reforming how districts are drawn.
Yeah. And what we've realized, we've actually been hearing from past legislators who've been writing us and calling us and actually meeting with us to say, you need to understand, you've talked about how gerrymandering fuels dysfunction. You need to spell that out. The people who draw the lines choose the legislators, choose the rules that govern the legislature, choose the agenda, decide what gets a hearing, decide what gets a vote. And the whole thing is held hostage by a very few people who are party operatives and funded very heavily by party money and also by lobbyists. Hmm. Those are the people who run the game, who control the show and decide what happens. And Pennsylvania has been held hostage by that for a very long time.
We were talking, the Committee of 70 has a map. I'm not sure exactly what to call it, but it's taking the map out to the public and saying to Pennsylvanians, you come up with a map. This is how it works. And it's a bit of a bar game, as I understand it.
Well, so they have a project called Draw the Lines, and the idea is to put mapping technology in the hands of citizens so people can see it's not that hard to draw a fair map, and it's a very difficult thing to draw a gerrymandered map. And the data that's available can be used for very nefarious reasons, or you can put the data aside and just draw maps that represent communities fairly. And so they have Draw the Lines. It's a project that they have mapping competitions. I think the deadline for the first one is December 14th. Mm-hmm. But we are partnering with them and hosting bar games for democracy across the state where people come and learn a little bit more about gerrymandering, a little bit more about the values behind it and why it matters. And then they're invited to get involved in drawing maps. And we certainly have some of our volunteers who have drawn wonderful maps, and we're looking forward to seeing how that competition plays out.
Just about a minute left here. What does your organization, Fair Districts PA, what are you then looking for as you look ahead? And well, we've been talking about congressional and also legislative districts.
One thing we're doing is trying to make this an election issue. So we have a Know Before You Vote page where we're asking candidates across the state, you know, do you support change? And we're asking people to vote on that issue. But then looking forward, we want a constitutional amendment to put the process in the hands of a citizen commission so that it's not done by the leaders who have a conflict of interest in this. They benefit themselves and they benefit their party. We want it to be a fair, open, transparent process that requires changing the Pennsylvania Constitution. We have policy wonks looking at how to do that, and we are certainly going to be working on that in the new year.
Well, as always, Carol Cunningham, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And she's chair of Fair Districts Pennsylvania, also vice president of government and social policy with the League of Women Voters of Pennsylvania, talking about redistricting in this state. We've got Ari Berman, who will be joining us after this very short break. He's voting rights reporter for Mother Jones, and we'll be getting a national perspective on voting and voter suppression and redistricting. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Years ago, I remember doing interviews about the accuracy of voting machines and the dubious use of hanging chads. Today, the issue is voting rights and voter suppression. We just talked about redistricting in Pennsylvania, a fight that's happening in other states. 34 states have some form of voter ID laws. A number of states have reduced the time period for early voting, the number of polling places, and have engaged in purging voters from the rolls. Our guest, Ari Berman, is the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. He's senior reporter for Mother Jones, voting rights reporter for Mother Jones. He's got a new article in the November-December issue about the drive to restore voting rights for ex-felons in Florida. Ari Berman joining us from the NPR studios in New York. Ari, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me back, Marty.
If I'm going to vote in November, should I worry about whether my vote counts or not?
It depends on where you vote, quite honestly, because the laws vary so significantly from state to state, which I think is a big problem in our country. Right now, 24 states have passed new voting restrictions since the 2010 election. So these are things like stricter voter ID laws, cutbacks to early voting, restrictions on voter registration drives, purges of the voter rolls, disenfranchising ex-felons, things like that. Not just one law, but a whole assortment of laws. If you live in one of these 24 states, like Georgia or North Dakota or Kansas, I think you should be quite concerned about how difficult it will be to vote. Additionally, if you live in one of 13 states like Pennsylvania that does not have paper backups for their voting machines, I think you should also be concerned about the possibility, a remote possibility, but still a possibility, that the elections can be hacked. And even if the results have been changed, we wouldn't necessarily know it because there are no paper backups, which I think is just crazy in this day and age.
Well, there's so much to talk about, but let me pick up on voter ID laws. And actually, there was a fight in Pennsylvania a couple of years ago wanting to institute voter ID. It was actually did not pass because the state was unable to really show that there was voter fraud as a problem. And yet we've got, what, about 34 states where there are voter ID laws, Ari?
Well, that's a little misleading because voter ID could be broadly defined, right? It could mean you have to bring a utility bill or a bank statement or something like that, which I don't have as much of a problem with. What Pennsylvania tried to do and what about a dozen states have done is required strict forms of government issue photo ID, which about 10% of Americans don't have. And it can be very burdensome for those that don't have it. So this issue just blew up this week and in recent weeks in North Dakota.
That's right.
Because what happened is the Supreme Court upheld a voter ID law in North Dakota. But here's the catch. The way they wrote that law is you have to have a residential address on your ID for the ID to count. Well, many Native American voters in North Dakota live on reservations that are very rural and they don't have street addresses. They get their mail at the post office and they use P.O. boxes. Well, they can't use their P.O. boxes to vote. So now we're in a situation 20 days before the election where Native Americans can't use their tribal IDs to vote in North Dakota, which has a very competitive Senate race between Heidi Heitkamp, the Democrat, and Kevin Cramer, the Republican. Heitkamp only won her first election in 2012 by 2,900 votes and got significant support for Native American voters. So now there's this crazy move underway by all the tribes to actually have to print out street addresses that they've never needed before to give to people at the polls so their tribal IDs will count. And this is the key thing. Everyone says, what's the big deal with requiring ID? It's not just requiring ID. It's requiring certain types of ID that some people, whether it's Native Americans in North Dakota or African Americans in Philly who might not drive or young people in Texas where they can vote with a gun permit but not a student ID. These are the kind of problems with voter ID laws.
And we should add this North Dakota case that was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes, it was. So what happened was the district court in North Dakota struck down this law because they found that 70,000 voters in North Dakota, including 5,000 Native American voters, did not have the forms of ID required by the law, and it was too restrictive as written. Then the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, one of the most conservative courts in the country, put this law back into effect right before the election, and the Supreme Court basically upheld what the appeals court had done. It wasn't a full opinion. It wasn't like there was oral arguments and a hearing. They basically just decided not to block the law. But it happened essentially a month before the election. So it's left everyone scrambling there and worried that thousands of Native American voters who already face all sorts of barriers in their lives might be disenfranchised in that state.
Let me pick, this is not Pennsylvania, but let me talk to you about Georgia, where you've got Stacey Abrams running against, she's a Democrat, running against Brian Kemp, who's the Republican for governor. Now, Kemp is also the Secretary of State, and he recently put something like 53,000 voter registration applicants on hold. Those turned out to be mostly black voters. It seems like there is a, if not a conflict of interest, certainly a lot of questions whether the Secretary of State, who's also running for governor, can make a decision like that. But Georgia also has something called the Exact Match Law. Can you explain that, Ari?
Yeah, Georgia has a very confusing voting process that's only gotten more difficult. And Kemp is really the one who's pushed to make these laws more difficult while he's running for governor. So I think there absolutely is an inherent conflict of interest. But what happens in Georgia is basically if your name on a voter registration form doesn't exactly match your name and state databases, they'll put you on a pending registration and basically send you a letter saying your registrations are pending. You can still vote with ID at the polls, although you can't vote by the mail. But this is very confusing. If someone gets a form in the mail telling them their registrations are pending, they feel like they're not going to be able to vote. And so even if you have like a hyphen missing on your name, if you use Thomas instead of Tom on one form and you use Tom on the other, you might not be able to register to vote in Georgia, even though in a lot of other states, they can figure this out pretty quickly that the person is who they say they are. So 50,000 voter registration applications in Georgia are in pending status. 80% are from people of color. 70% are from African Americans. And this has become a huge issue in this race because there's such a difference between the candidates. I mean, you have Brian Kemp, a conservative white Republican, running against Stacey Abrams, a black Democrat, who would be the first black woman governor in U.S. history. So there's already a lot of focus on this race. And the fact that the Secretary of State is enforcing these restrictive voting laws while running for governor has a lot of people disturbed about what's happening in Georgia.
And that's Ari Berman, senior reporter for Mother Jones. He covers voting rights and wrote a book a couple of months ago, was it, Ari? I'm kind of losing track of
a couple of years, 2015.
Okay, 2015, called Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And we asked him to join us because, as we know, the midterms are just a couple of weeks away, and there's much in play, much attention focusing on these midterms. You can join us, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. All right, let me read a couple of comments that we have here. We began by talking with Carol Cunningham about gerrymandering in Pennsylvania. I just wanted to put a gerrymandering question to you. An email from Stu. He said, just set the districts to be county lines, never change them. End of the problem. The idea is that these lines are drawn to create districts, and that has in some cases resulted in the gerrymandering of a state like Pennsylvania, other states as well. How do we get out of this gerrymandering problem?
Well, in some cases, there's a reason to have districts. For example, to boost representation from minorities who, if you just draw the districts based on county lines, wouldn't necessarily have an opportunity to be elected. So drawing districts in and of themselves, I don't think is bad. The problem is when politicians draw their own districts, because there is an absolute conflict of interest there, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans doing it. So that's why I think we should have nonpartisan redistricting like they do in Iowa, where they basically have a state demographer who looks at all the data and draws the districts. And that way you have as many competitive districts as possible. That way you don't have the politicians themselves doing it. And I think that way you get the best looking districts that are also the most competitive as well, while also taking into account things like representation for historically disenfranchised communities, not splitting up areas, basic principles of redistricting that a lot of people in Pennsylvania and other states have not followed.
Rick asked this question. He says, I'm from Delaware, where we only have white guys and Democrats running. I'm a moderate Republican. I'll vote, but I'm not sure it's worth it since my state is controlled by Democrats. Is that fair? And I think when we talk about this, we should make sure that people understand that this is a bipartisan problem.
Absolutely. I mean, gerrymandering in particular is a bipartisan problem because whether it's Democrats are in Maryland or whether it's Republicans in Pennsylvania, I mean, whoever is drawing the districts is trying to get an inherent advantage. And that's why I think that we should take the politics out of this completely. Basically, I think in every election, no matter where you are, there's going to be at least one competitive election in your area. So, I mean, even if there's not a high ballot competitive election, there might be a competitive election down ballot, or the primaries themselves might be competitive. So there's always going to be a competitive election. But I understand a lot of people are frustrated. I mean, I'm in New York right now, and basically every election in New York is already predetermined for me. I mean, our general election, for all practical purposes, was our primary when we decided who our Democratic nominees would be for governor and attorney general and other races. And so I think that's frustrating to people. I think more competition is good. I think one of the things that's happened in Pennsylvania when the court redrew these districts is there's a lot more competitive districts now. And people always look at it, oh, well, it's going to hurt Republicans. It's going to benefit Democrats. I think the bigger story here is that there's a lot more competitive districts in Pennsylvania than there were before. And that gives people more incentive to actually vote in these areas.
And that's, of course, the congressional district. Let me an email from Breyer, who says, I'm extremely concerned about election hacking in Pennsylvania. What do we need? Who do we need to pressure to get paper backups? We've actually did a show about this a couple of months ago. I mean, there are efforts to try to do something, but Ari, this costs money.
I believe the governor, correct me if I'm wrong, Marty, I believe the governor has said he's going to get new voting machines in Pennsylvania, but they're not going to have them for this election. And it's just crazy to me that Pennsylvania, a perennial swing state, a state that was decided by 40,000 votes in 2016, doesn't have paper backups. I mean, at the very least, this is what we should be doing. The other thing that concerns me is that we know that the Russians tried to access voter registration lists in 21 states in 2016. And they actually got a hold of voter registration lists in Illinois, and they got information on 500,000 voters. So you don't even have to hack the voting machines. If the Russians or the North Koreans or anyone else were to get a hold of voter registration lists, delete people from the rolls, change people's names, change people's addresses, that alone could cause mass confusion on Election Day. So I think we need to be doing a lot more to protect our election systems. Both the states and the Congress and the administration have not done enough on this front. I think a lot of people are really concerned about it. They haven't seen solutions forthcoming, and they haven't seen solutions forthcoming in nearly the manner and the speed that they want.
Is this an argument for nationalizing elections? If you've got 50 ways of running an election, does it make sense to try to figure out what's the best one and then replicate it?
I think we should have some basic standards. I understand that our Constitution gives a lot of power to the states, but I think we should have some basic standards. I think every state should have paper backups. I don't think that's that controversial. I think every state should have a minimum of a week or 2 weeks of early voting. Pennsylvania doesn't have early voting.
No.
New York doesn't have early voting. That's crazy to me. The reason why we vote on a Tuesday in November, Marty, is because that's when farmers used to bring their crops to the market in the 1800s. And we know that a lot of people aren't able to vote on a Tuesday in November because they're working. So if you work a job at a place like McDonald's, or you work at a factory, or you have a bunch of kids and you have no one to watch them, or you have five-hour lines like we've seen in Florida and Ohio and in some cases in Pennsylvania, then it's very, very difficult for you to be able to vote. So the idea of giving people one or two more weeks to be able to vote so that everything is not done on Election Day, I think would make the process go a lot smoother, would make it more convenient for people, would increase voter turnout. I think everyone should be sent a ballot if they want to be able to get one. I think there should be an option to vote by mail in every state. I think that we should automatically register everyone to vote because a quarter of Americans aren't even registered to vote. I think there's a lot we could be doing to make the process more fair, and either states can adopt them, or I think we could have some basic national standards that I think maybe we won't get agreement on all of these points, but I think we'd at least get some agreement on some of these points.
And that's Ari Berman. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. All right, I do want to talk about the story, the piece you have in the November-December edition of Mother Jones, Inside the Unlikely Movement That Could Restore Voting Rights to 1.4 Million Floridians. This is about felons and voting, or ex-felons and voting. This is a story largely about Florida, but it does raise questions about who cannot vote, and help us understand about felons and voting.
The laws are very complicated because, again, they vary state by state. So in some states, prisoners can actually vote. In Maine and Vermont, you can cast a ballot from prison. In other states, you can vote when you're on probation, on parole. In other states, you can vote when you have a completely clean record, so when you're done with probation and parole and paid off all your fines. But Florida is only one of four states, one of only four states in which ex-felons can't vote unless they are pardoned by the governor.
Wow.
Meaning that even after you've served your time, paid your debt to society, you have to wait 5 to 7 years to even apply to get your rights to vote back. Then you have to be pardoned by the governor. And this governor, Rick Scott, has barely given anyone the right to vote back. The numbers are staggering in Florida, Marty. And I think this is why this is a national story. 1 in 10 Floridians can't vote because they have a felony conviction, including 1 in 5 African-Americans in the state.
How many people are we talking about?
1.7 million people in Florida can't vote because of felon disenfranchisement laws, including 500,000 African Americans. So the most important swing state in the country, which gets the most attention every 4 years, or among the most attention every 4 years, disenfranchises 1 in 10 people, even after they've paid their debt to society. And the fascinating thing is there's an initiative on the ballot to overturn this law that would restore voting rights to about 1.4 million of the 1.7 million ex-felons who can't vote. And it needs 60% support to pass. Right now, it's polling at 75% of the vote. So it has very strong bipartisan support. And you have the ACLU, the Christian Coalition, the Koch brothers, a very broad network of people supporting this. And what it tells me is that despite all the national efforts by Republicans to make it harder to vote, at the local level, a lot of people want to see the political process opened up. And particularly on this issue, they believe that people should be given second chances. And there's no reason why we should prevent 1 in 10 people in Florida from voting because of a mistake they made in the past.
And why is this a partisan issue, nationally speaking?
It's a partisan issue nationally speaking because I think that in some states there's a belief that if you allow ex-felons to vote, they're going to vote Democratic. And I think there's some data to suggest that. But I think in a state like Florida, there is a ton of white Republican Trump supporters, quite frankly, that can't vote either, that don't like this policy. And in fact, the move to restore voting rights to ex-felons in Florida is being led by both an African-American who lost his right to vote and a white Republican who lost his right to vote. And they're both basically saying it doesn't matter who you vote for or which party you align with. We just believe that you should have the basic ability to be able to vote and determine how your communities are run.
In fact, it's a fascinating story how these two men essentially hooked up to get behind this effort and how different they are and yet how they came together on this particular issue.
It's really fascinating. I mean, you have an African-American who was addicted to drugs, homeless and suicidal, Desmond Mead, who became the leader of this effort. And he joined up with a white Republican, Neil Volz, who was a former chief of staff to a member of Congress and a former lobbyist to Jack Abramoff, the super lobbyist who was part of this huge scandal in the early 2000s. I mean, so you have two people from extremely different backgrounds with very different political beliefs, but they agree on this one basic thing, that if you've paid your debt to society, you should be able to vote. And I think that is a message, quite frankly, that I think resonates with a lot of people, regardless of their political affiliation.
Well, let's take another break in Radio Times today. We will continue our conversation with Ari Berman, again, senior reporter for Mother Jones, and we've been talking about the right to vote, efforts at voter suppression here in the United States. And he wrote a book a couple of years ago called Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Ari Berman. He's a senior reporter for Mother Jones, has been writing for some time now about voting rights. In fact, has an interesting new article in the November-December issue of Mother Jones about the drive to restore voting rights for ex-felons in Florida. You can join our conversation, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. All right, got a bunch of comments here. One from an email from Frank saying, what does your guest think about abolishing the Electoral College as a way of making presidential elections more fair and representative in the 21st century? What are your thoughts about that?
I'm in favor of abolishing the Electoral College. I don't think we should have a situation where presidents win a minority of votes but are able to get all of the power. And if you are a Democrat in New York or you're a Republican in California, your vote really doesn't matter in presidential elections. And I think if we had a popular vote, that would get a lot more people involved. I mean, I know, Marty, you must like it in Philadelphia. You guys get a lot of attention.
Yes,
the presidential candidates roll through and they do your show. And it's great for people in Pennsylvania. But if you live right next door to Pennsylvania in New York, they only come to fundraise. They never ask for your vote. And so I think a lot of people feel like their votes don't matter, that about 10 states every single time decide the presidential election. And I think we're in a very strange situation where twice in the past 16 years, the person who has lost the popular vote has won the Electoral College. And I don't think that's good for democracy.
Is it a coincidence that the losers have been Democrats?
I don't think it's a coincidence, because what's happening is that Democrats are increasingly living in urban areas and increasingly living in blue states on the coasts. And they're living in places like Philadelphia and New York City and Houston and Austin and Portland and Los Angeles and San Francisco. And so in the vast middle of the country, where elections are usually decided in places like Ohio and Michigan and Iowa, people are leaving those places and they're moving to more Democratic or to more Democratic places, even within Republican states like Texas. And so we're in a situation where Republicans have a disproportionate advantage in the Electoral College. They have a disproportionate advantage in the Senate because of the composition of the Senate, that North Dakota has the same representatives as California. They have a disproportionate impact in the House because they drew the districts in so many of these races by virtue of winning the 2010 elections in state legislatures. And so we're in a situation where Republicans have an inherent advantage in the political system, partly because of where Democrats live, partly because of how the system was set up, and partly because they controlled this process in so many places.
Let me read some more comments. A tweet from David who says, we do have paper backups in Pennsylvania. It's up to the county that you where you live. I live in Chester County, and we, quote, fill in the circle and feed it into an optical scanner. I then get a recipe, as he calls it. The machine keeps count for easy reporting. The paper ballot is the backup. That might be true in where David is in Chester County, but I don't think that's true across Pennsylvania.
No, it's not true across Pennsylvania. And so, again, I mean, you have one of the most important swing states in the country where we can't accurately say we know 100% certain these are what the results are. There's no evidence that in the past the machines have been hacked or tampered with. But again, this erodes public confidence in the elections. This is the idea that the election could be hacked and we wouldn't even necessarily know if results have been changed, I think make a lot of people concerned. And it seems like as a basic principle, we should be able to verify everyone's vote in every state in the country, in every jurisdiction polling place in the country.
We're talking about how hard it is to vote or whether people feel secure about their vote. But there are also some positive things that are happening related to the ballot. Can you talk about that, Ari?
There are actually a lot of positive things that have been happening that have been somewhat overshadowed by all the suppression we're seeing
in a lot of states.
There are going to be ballot initiatives in seven states, including a bunch of important swing states like Florida and Michigan and Nevada, to do a number of different things. One would be to restore voting rights to ex-felons, which we talked about in Florida. Another is to make registration easier, so to do things like Election Day registration or automatic voter registration, which is on the ballot in Nevada and Michigan and Maryland. Again, this is something that Pennsylvania and states like New York don't have that I believe that we should have that would get more people involved. Also, there are initiatives to make gerrymandering less rampant, to make redistricting more nonpartisan. That's on the ballot in places like Colorado and Utah and Michigan. And so there are a bunch of states that could end up doing good things on voting rights that I think would make it easier for a lot of people to be able to vote and also have fairer districts, no matter whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. What's interesting to me is that these initiatives so far have very strong bipartisan support, that a lot of Republicans support things like Election Day registration, and a lot of Republicans support things like having more competitive districts, because a bunch of them live in Democratic areas where there's not competitive elections either. And so I think if you get to the local level, the discussion about voting is less politicized than it is at the national level. And to me, that's a good thing. I also think there's a lot more focus on state races, Marty, this time around than in the past. And there's a lot more focus on state legislative races, secretary of state races, state attorney general races, governor's races. This is really where the action is on voting rights, that despite all the discussion of Trump, despite all the election of Congress, it's the state that really run their own elections. And who you elect at the local level to run your elections is critically, critically important. So whether that's in Pennsylvania or whether that's in places like Ohio or Michigan or Iowa, there's a lot of really competitive local races that I think people should pay attention to, that even if they're turned off by national politics, these state races have a lot of impact on their lives.
An email from John who says it's only gerrymandering when Republicans draw the lines. When Democrats are in power and they draw the lines, that's okay. Just like when Harry Reid changed the rules in the Senate and now they want to change them back again. And I appreciate that comment, John, but I think we can all agree that the gerrymandering, whoever is doing it, really disenfranchises many voters.
Yeah, and I just said earlier that I was in favor of nonpartisan redistricting, that I don't think it's okay when Democrats gerrymander in places like Maryland. So I think that we should have nonpartisan redistricting in every state. I think it's an inherent conflict of interest when whoever is in power draws their own districts. I think a majority of Americans want to see nonpartisan or independent redistricting. I think the roadblock has been both the politicians themselves and the Supreme Court. Because the Supreme Court had a major opportunity to strike down partisan gerrymandering in the last term in a case from Wisconsin and also in a case from Maryland, and they punted. And they basically sent these cases back to the states, and the Supreme Court missed a historic opportunity to do something about the problem of gerrymandering at a time when people in both parties don't like the system as it works.
A tweet from Janelle who says, we should have a national holiday to vote. And Ari, you were talking about the fact that we vote on a Tuesday in November because of 19th century harvest behavior. But what about a national holiday? Would that help, do you think?
I think it would help. And people are already doing this. Actually, I was on MSNBC this week, and I was on with the founder of Blue Point Brewery in Long Island, and they have just launched a new beer called Voters Day Off. And so
very good branding, I have to say, on their part.
You can enjoy the beverage and feel good about what you're doing, because they are going to give all of their employees, they have about 100 employees, the day off on Election Day. And they're basically saying that everyone should be able to vote. And again, a lot of people aren't able to vote. When you ask people why they didn't vote, about 15% said they were too busy to be able to do it. And so I think both having Election Day be a national holiday, but also just to have a minimum amount of early voting, I think is really, really important. I think a lot of people aren't able to vote because a Tuesday in November, for one reason or another, is just not convenient for them. And that's why 37 states have early voting. That's why 27 states send you an absentee ballot with no questions asked. That's why states are moving to vote by mail. That's why 14 states have Election Day registration. So if you don't register in time or you have a problem, you can show up at the polls and register and fix that. These are the kind of things we should be doing to get more people involved in the process.
And that's Ari Berman, senior reporter for Mother Jones. We are talking about voting in the United States, and you can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I do want to ask you about voter purges, and one can understand, because people move or they die or they change their name, that there are reasons for at least going in and checking voter rolls and making sure that things are all very kosher and copacetic there. But nonetheless, I can imagine how it also can toss someone off who is a legitimate voter.
Yeah, I think everyone wants to see accurate voting rolls, but we're seeing more aggressive voter purging recently that is quite disturbing, because normally you're only removed from the rolls if you've done something that makes you ineligible, right? If you've moved or you've died, or you've committed some sort of crime that would render you ineligible to vote. But now people are being purged in Ohio, for example, for not voting, or they could be purged because they've been wrongly flagged as double voters as part of the cross-check program run by Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, which often misidentifies people because they might confuse a John Smith in Iowa with a John Smith in Kansas and think that someone voted twice, even though it's John L. Smith in Kansas and John F. Smith in Iowa, because the technology they're using is not sophisticated enough. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing more and more people purged from the voting rolls, and people feel like this is being done for political reasons. For example, in Ohio, where they purge people for not voting. So basically the way it works in Ohio is that if you miss an election, they send you a notice from the state. If you don't respond to that notice and you miss two more elections, you're just removed from the voter rolls, even if you've done nothing other than not vote. So you've done nothing to make you ineligible to vote. You just haven't voted. Let's say you vote in 2008. You don't vote for a while. You want to show up again in 2016. You're off the rolls. Well, an analysis found that voters in Democratic areas in African-American neighborhoods were twice as likely to be purged than voters in more white and more Republican neighborhoods. So the fear here is that this purging is being done not for trying to ensure the accuracy of the rolls, but for political reasons. And that's what people are concerned about.
So what concern? I mean, first of all, if you are purged, you, especially if you're in Ohio and you haven't voted, or you haven't voted in the last one or two cycles, how would you know you had been purged?
Well, that's the problem, is people don't normally know that they're purged until they show up and it's too late. Now, in states that have Election Day registration, this again is why Election Day registration is so important, you could register again and you would be able to vote. But in most states, they don't have that. So you don't normally find out that you're purged until too late. Or you're sent notices in the mail that are very, very confusing, like in Georgia, where 53,000 people have been sent pending notifications. Well, they're still technically eligible to vote. They can show up and vote. But if you got a letter in the mail like that, Marty, you would probably think that you're not eligible to vote if you didn't read the very fine print.
A tweet from Steve who says, if I can pay my taxes online, why can't I vote online? Now, some states, you can do that, right?
Well, I don't think you can vote online in any states. I think about 40 states have online voter registration now. I think given the threat of Russian hacking that we've seen, online voting is probably a long way away. But I think online registration is a no-brainer. And the fact is, in places like Texas that have 3 million unregistered people, you can't register to vote online, which I think is nuts. I mean, in this day and age, young people in particular, but really everybody, is able to do things on their phone. I mean, able to do virtually anything on my phone. But if I live in one of these 10 states, I can't register to vote on my phone, which I think is nuts. But I think the whole notion of online voting, there would have to be some serious safeguards in effect, given the breaches we've seen, not just with voting, but in all other areas of life as well.
And that's Ari Berman, again, senior reporter for Mother Jones. He covers voting rights, or the right to vote, and voting suppression as well, and has a new piece in the paper having to do with, in the magazine, having to do with ex-felons and voting in Florida. I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Question from Eugene. It seems to me that red-controlled states are always the ones purging people from voter rolls and suppressing votes. Is that just my imagination?
I think this movement, at least in recent years, has been largely led by Republicans. They have really been the ones who have both been pushing the myth of widespread voter fraud, even though there's very little evidence of that. And they've also been pushing to tighten access to the ballot. Now, that doesn't mean that Democrats are always off the hook. I don't think Democrats in Pennsylvania or New York or a bunch of other states have been as aggressive as they need to open up the system. In New York, for example, we have a governor who has not thrown his weight behind early voting and automatic registration and other things that would get people involved in the political process. He says he supports these things, but he hasn't really done anything to push for them. And I think it's unfortunate because, as I said earlier, Marty, I think there's a lot of support among voters at the local level to make it easier to vote. They might support voter ID laws, but I also think they want to see early voting. They want to see it made easier to register to vote. They want more people to participate. They think democracy works better when more people participate. Unfortunately, at the political system, particularly within the Republican Party, there is a belief that that party does better when fewer people vote. And I think that needs to change. That belief needs to change if we're going to make some progress on voting rights. I think there has to be a consensus within the parties. Let's debate the issues, but let's not debate whether people can participate in the first place.
Do you see the midterms as a test for the country, in a sense, a test for voter engagement, voter participation, but also voting systems?
Yes. I see it first off as a referendum on voter suppression, given what we're seeing in places like Georgia and North Dakota. I also see it as a unique opportunity to expand voting rights at the local level through these ballot initiatives, through electing candidates that have run on promoting voting rights instead of restricting them. So I think a lot of progress can be made in 2018, particularly at the local level. And I think if people pay attention to what's happening in their states, if people pay attention to state ballot initiatives, if people pay attention to state races, if people pay attention to their voting laws and voting systems, 2018 could actually be a very good year for voting rights, despite the suppression that we're seeing in states around the country.
Even though midterm election results tend to be, so much less than the elections for the years when we are also voting for a president of the United States.
Yeah, and I think that's something to always keep in mind, that even despite all the political engagement, about 60% of the public's just not going to vote in this election.
So I think 60%. They're just not going to do it.
Okay. They're just not going to do it. So I think we have to ask ourselves why. Why is it that people aren't participating despite all the news and the focus on these elections? Why are people sitting them out? Then in presidential elections, despite all the attention, why do we only have 60% turnout? Why are 40% of Americans sitting this out? Either because they're not registered or one reason or another. I think we have to ask ourselves these deeper questions about why so many people are disengaged from politics.
Well, Ari Berman, as always, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks so much, Mari. That was great.
Great for us as well. Learned a lot, as always. Senior reporter for Mother Jones. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter, and sign up for our newsletter. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for those questions as well.